call straightforward until it wasn't. I wasn't closely looking at what's our churn. How many clients are we losing every single month? If you get to 100 clients and you've got a 5% churn, that means you're losing 5 clients every single month. If you've built the business model around landing 5 clients per month, that is where you plateau. That will carry you to 7 figures. The metrics really shift from 7 figures to 8 figures because it becomes not just revenue growth, but it's also retention. And then we've got to start to think about profitability as well, because revenue is vanity, profit is sanity. And I really want to hear your thoughts on this. What does a strong team look like at $5 million plus? All right, welcome to another episode of the Scaling Together podcast, where we're talking all about how to grow and scale your digital marketing agency and how we do that together. And today we want to talk about 7- and 8-figure bottlenecks, kind of the bottlenecks that agencies inevitably hit and the plateaus that you have to figure out how to work through to push through to that 8-figure level and beyond.
And the first question is, why do agencies get stuck at the 1 to 3 million mark?
Yeah, this is something we spent a lot of time thinking about, talking about. You know, you think about 7-figure agency, you know, the original brand promise was, you know, how to build a $1 million company, right? Mm-hmm. And we helped a lot of agencies get to that level. And then it became like, well, you know, what's next, right? And it's like, obviously there's a lot more to accomplish in an agency once you get to 7 figures, right? In terms of increasing profitability and continuing to grow.
People feel that once you get to a million that, yes, we did it. We got to 7 million. There's no issues anymore. Life is amazing. But the reality is there's still lots of issues to tackle. They're just different. They look different. And you're more confident about it, and you're more experienced. But what do you do? What do the bottlenecks look like, and how do you tackle
them? The biggest thing we see happen again and again is, as you grow the agency, there's always a churn, but you don't notice the churn as much. And so I remember vividly when we first crossed 7 figures, and mm-hmm. we kind of got stuck, and I was like, what is going on? We had grown the business to the place where we were landing 5 to 7 clients every single month. Just consistently, we're getting 5 to 7 new clients. They were signing up on our retainer program for $1,500 per month at the time. And, you know, it was like all straightforward until it wasn't. And I wasn't closely looking at what's our churn. How many clients are we losing every single month? And if you just do simple math, if you get to 100 clients, let's just say you got 100 clients, mm-hmm. and you've got a 5% churn, that means you're losing 5 clients every single month. If you've built the business model around landing 5 clients per month, that is where you plateau. So you're just selling to maintain your current position. And at that stage in the game, there's only a couple things you can change, right? You can increase the number of new clients that you get. Okay, we got to do sales more. We got to do more marketing and get to 7 clients per month so we can have a 2-client delta. Or you could say, all right, we've got to reduce the churn, right? 5% isn't acceptable. We got to get that down to 3%. And now you're losing 3 clients and you're gaining 7, and that's how you get through those plateaus. But it's really figuring out that constraint, right? And where agencies get stuck is, and they don't realize the velocity is going to stop eventually unless you start to increase the number of clients, reduce the churn, increase the value of every new client that you get more repeat and referral, like cross-sell opportunities and upsell that existing client base.
Let's dig a little bit deeper into what you just said as far as those two levers mm-hmm. of increasing revenue and increasing retention. Can you give me 3 off the top of your head, the best movers of that needle if we need more revenue to come in, sales and marketing? What are the 3 things that they can do, the key stuff, no matter, regardless of what size you are, that you can do in your business to grow out of, if you're talking specifically about the 1 to 3 million, what are those?
I would say the first thing you want to do is address the churn issue. Like if you're higher than 5% churn, that's a red flag. And so it's going in and saying, okay, are we selling the right clients? Are we setting clear expectations? Do we have a good account management check-in process? Are we maybe, you know, putting contracts in place where they have to stick with us for at least a year because we're going to invest all this time and the energy? If you're plateaued and the issue is retention, that's the big move. If you're averaging a 3% churn, 97% or more, then what are we going to do to increase the sales volume? Maybe we got to increase the budget. Maybe we've got to go do some more trade shows. Maybe it's time to build that outbound sales team and put an appointment setting process in place. But there's very specific decisions you can make when you're clear on what that constraint in the business is.
Love it. And so if the lever is retention, like, yes, we've got our sales and marketing dialed in, we're getting a bunch of clients coming in, but they're leaving out the back door, and we're trying to figure out what retention is, what would you say are the three top things that they can do to help improve retention?
Yeah, the three biggest things that we found were, first of all, moving to up the value ladder for the client base. So using plumbing and HVAC SEO as the example, right, where we're like, oh, we're at 100 clients, but now we're stuck. What we realized, we were selling a lot of one-man operators, and they had the highest probability to churn. And so at that stage in the business, we said, that's it. You have to be doing at least $500,000 per year to qualify to do business with us. And, you know, we took on a little bit harder sales process in some cases, but those clients tend to stick with us long term. So set a little bit higher standard for the client. And then the other thing we did was we said, like, you need to commit to stick with us for a year, because we're going to build the website, we're going to do the SEO, we're going to put all this stuff in place. And when you get people that are coming in thinking in their mind, all right, we're with this company for a year, we're going to let it run its course, you've got a much better clientele. And so that those two big decisions can drastically reduce the churn, which can help you get that breakthrough.
I love that. Let's talk more about decisions. So when you're scaling in your company, what are the biggest decision-making factors that are going to move the needle? How do we evolve at scale with our decision-making process?
I think it's obviously you've got goals, right? At the beginning of the quarter, at the beginning of the year, what's the goal? Where are we trying to go? And then looking at what those ceilings are. We've actually got a really nice formula we put together for our mastermind, which I'll be happy to share with anybody listening. If you go to sevenfigureagency.com/ceiling, there's a simple calculator that will show you, you know, what your plateau is going to be and like what it is that's holding you back most right now. Is it new clients? Is it churn? Or is it the average value per client?
Awesome.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to hear from you, like, what does real accountability look like at the leadership level, you know, between 7 and 8 figures?
What does accountability look like? Accountability for leadership is interesting because in order to determine whether a leader is being effective in their role, there's three different layers to it. So the first layer is their actual role. Are they hitting their KPIs? Mm. That's pretty obvious, very clear. Like, here's the 3 to 5 things that we've decided is the thing that's going to be the needle mover in the business. So for example, for marketing, for sales, for delivery and fulfillment, for finance, and for account management. What are those 3 to 5 KPIs per department that we're gonna hold them accountable to, and we're gonna know whether we're winning or not winning based on these few metrics? So that's the simplest piece of it. But then there's two other layers to that. And one of them is up and one of them is down, above and below. So the above one is if the leader is thinking, how can I continue to improve? In order to have that leader needs to be obsessed with their role, obsessed with how they're going to get clients more success, obsessed with AI, obsessed with details of how we're going to get there. So you're not going to get that with somebody who's ho-hum, just keeping and maintaining processes, because if there's no change, if you continue to do the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, that's the definition of insanity, as we know. And so you need to have somebody who's not just maintaining the level of your department, but is looking to the future, has a vision to help grow that. You have the vision of the entire company. But to keep you from the bottleneck for each department, that's why you have leaders in place who are looking to see, how can I use AI now with this new industry? And so with this new layer of AI. And then the other piece of it is down. So below them is the people who report to this leader. And so thinking, is this person being a good leader? Do they have the ability to control their emotions? When they get upset, do they yell? Do they chastise people in public, or are they doing it in private and raising people up in public? Are they keeping the standards regardless of mood? Are they showing up? Even though they had a crummy situation, something personal is happening in their life, they still give it 110%, just like we're expected of as well. And so those 5 different categories that every leader should possess, are they doing that, raising up their leaders, and also giving accountability to the people that report to them. So are they making sure that each person, and they're going through time audits and things like that and keeping track of how each person is leveling up their own game in their department as well. So if they're doing above, at their station, and below, and keeping an eye on all three of those, then they are the rock star A player that you've always dreamed of that will take this company to the highest heights.
Mm. Love that. How do you identify when a leader is no longer a fit? Because sometimes the team that got you to a million isn't the one that's going to get you to 5 million.
And the biggest thing that we've seen other agencies do as a mistake, and we've done this ourselves time and time again, I feel like we have to relearn this. But the biggest key thing is the fact that we promote a lot of times on experience, right? Loyalty is an important aspect in our business as owners, and we care about the people. We're creating a culture, and these aren't just employees, they're team members on this team. And so it's what we wanna do is continue to create opportunities. And so if we see somebody and there's an opening that comes up in our company for a leadership position, we wanna raise that person up into that role. The mistake is not taking the time to make sure that we put this in place beforehand. You have to have that level of vision for each person in the company to elevate into those leadership roles, to know, all right, this position is gonna open up. We're gonna need a leadership role very soon. Tagging, all right, who on our team would be the right fit for this? Let's start pruning them and giving them the tools and the sessions and books that they're going to need to elevate them. What coaching are they going to need to get them to that point? And so not doing this piece is a huge mistake. Though you'll promote the person because of loyalty and say, hey, look, you've been showing great reliability and things like that, so we're gonna put you in this position. Of course, if you're doing well in this role, you're gonna do fantastic in this leadership role. No training, hardly, you know, no, we're just other than like, you're gonna figure it out, right? And so moving them into that position, and it's a very sink or swim approach. And the first thing we notice is they get bogged down with a whole bunch of tasks. They don't know how to necessarily monitor their calendar based on these new roles that they're in charge of. And so even though they understand what the role entails of what they're going to be responsible for ultimately, it's how they're going to tackle it, what they're letting go of, making sure that they understand how to hand off things to somebody else effectively, and how to effectively block their time to make sure that now they have time. It's a totally different role to if you are somebody who's working in a position, a doer position, versus a leader position that is in charge of other people. And so it's just knowing the differences and building them up for success in coaching them into that role. That is the biggest piece that we've missed, that we see other people now doing the same. And so that putting the time and effort of moving before you move them into that position is coaching them into that role is a big key factor.
Yeah.
How do metrics change at higher levels, Josh?
Yeah, like kind of going to the seven-figure level and on to the eight-figure level. As you're getting to seven figures, the main metric is how many new clients we're getting per month, how much recurring revenue is there per month, and that's the main thing, right? And you can just focus on that, and kind of that will carry you to seven figures. Mm-hmm. The metrics really shift from seven figures to eight figures because it becomes now, you know, not just revenue growth, but it's also retention, right? If we're landing five clients per month, what's our retention rate? How many are we losing per month? What's the actual net new client growth? And then we've got to start to think about profitability as well, because revenue is vanity, profit is sanity, right? And so like making sure we've got the financials in control, the gross margin makes financial sense, and there's profitability. But as you get to like that $5 million level and you're going to eight figures and, you know, 10 million and more, it becomes more really understanding the cost to acquire a client. How much are we spending on marketing? How much are we spending on sales team? How much are we spending on commission to get an appointment and to get a sale? And then what's the lifetime customer value? Like if we're charging $2,500 per month and we've got a 97% retention rate, what is one client worth to us? And you start to really obsess over cost to acquire a client, and then the lifetime customer value, and then ultimately the cost to acquire versus the lifetime customer value. And when you've got those metrics dialed in, you know, you can continue to grow, you know, profitably as the company continues to scale. All right. So final question here on this topic, and I really want to hear your thoughts on this. Like, what does a strong team look like at $5 million plus?
So a strong team means you have removed yourself. At $5 million, you've definitely removed yourself from the company. So the leadership position today is have the COO integrator person in place that's overseeing all of operations. They're going to make sure that all of the directors that you have in place are working and coordinating using similar systems. There's no gaps in the processes, that SOPs are being followed by all. They're making sure that all the rocks are being completed in a timely manner. And they're there to support. If anyone is struggling meeting their KPIs, they're there to jump in and help them elevate to as needed. And if to get a pulse on, does anybody need to hire for their department? So then you have your marketing department. That's gonna be another head that's gonna sit on the leadership team. You're going to have your sales director that's going to be focused only on sales. I know as you're growing, before you get to 5 million, it tends to be sales and marketing are one director, but eventually you do want to split that up because the company is getting so much larger that you do want to have that special focus for marketing only. And then once you move on to delivery and fulfillment, that's going to be a director role today. And you're gonna wanna have an account management director as well and have a voice from finance department. What we're seeing is that not on the leadership today, but AI has a seat reporting to one of the layers of the departments. And so we have it under account management right now. And they're working with the team. And eventually over the next 3 years, account management, what we're seeing, will eventually morph together with the fulfillment and delivery piece. So it's all one, and there's only gonna be one director instead of two separate directors for that. There's going to be so much AI opportunity for the fulfillment piece and delivery that it's going to have account managers working on the delivery piece through AI and being that QC, managing those processes. And so it leaves an open seat on the leadership table to now, as long as you have 50% or more of a department utilizing AI, then now instead of having delivery and fulfillment be on a seat on the leadership, it will be AI having a seat at the leadership table. How can we continue to grow, not just serve our clients with AI, but also internally with our own systems and processes, make sure everyone is always on the same level playing field, that no one knows a lot more significantly with AI than another department. It should be all knowing the same amount of tools, utilizing the same things. And so that's what leadership looks like with finance as well on that director level seats.
Amazing. So a lot of great insights and takeaways here on how to get to seven figures and eight figures and some of the bottlenecks that we see agencies face. If you've got follow-up questions on this, please post them into the comments and let us know. Like, what did you like? What did you dislike? What would you like us to go deeper on this particular topic? And thanks for joining us. We look forward to seeing you on a future episode of the Scaling Together podcast.